You are now aware of the present moment. Welcome. And
My sister, please help my sister, please help my sister, please help my daughter. Please help all
ask everyone
friends and
on Zoom to please mute right
help
now.
us find peace. Help us learn to live.
Hey, Susan K, can you hear me?
Yeah, I did it. I did it. So, welcome everyone. This is day 3 of 4, night 3 of 4 of an introduction to mindfulness meditation class. And it's nice to see many of you back here again. Welcome back. Is there anyone here that is brand new to meditation or brand new to the center? Brand new to the center? Welcome. What's your name? I'm Dawn.
My name's August.
August, nice to meet you. I'm going to start with a brief recap from last time. Last time we went over mindfulness of bodily sensation and feeling tone. So how we relate to the sensations of our bodies, and more broadly, how the body can be an alternate to being in our heads. So that's a very, very short recap. I'm wondering if anyone who was here last week wants to add highlights that you remember from last week. Maybe we'll start with the Zoom folks and then move to the room. Anything that you feel like was a major takeaway or helpful to remember, helpful to share? Nope. Anybody in the room have anything they remember that they want to share?
Memory is not what it used to be, but I basically remember. I think you referred to them as anchors, and they're usually referred to in the first one we did with the breath, and then you mentioned the body, and then you said the other one, third one was sound. I remember that much.
Great, thank you. Yeah, that's a nice summation of the class so far. So that in mindfulness meditation, we will often use a primary anchor of attention. And often it starts with the breath and then with body sensations. And then an alternate to that for people for whom it's not so helpful to focus on breath or body sensations is to notice the act of hearing, notice sound. And this meditation center is a pretty good place to do that. There's often stuff going on outside, as there is tonight. You can hear like little kids' voices and that kind of stuff. So, to invite that in. And we also talked last week about working with pain, physical pain mostly, but also mental pain. And how moving to the body can be a really helpful way if we go to the whole body or safe spot in our bodies if there's pain. And if there's too much physical discomfort, to notice hearing again, or you notice seeing, opening the eyes, which expands what meditation teachers like to call the container, the sense of presence outwards, and can make any discomfort kind of easier to be with. One analogy is that if you have a glass of water and you put a teaspoon of salt in it, it impacts the water pretty much a lot, right? But if you have a swimming pool worth of water and you put a teaspoon of salt in it, are you going to notice the salt? So it's like that with expanding outwards, allowing our consciousness to focus on things around us, especially sound. So that's a little bit of a recap. And are there any questions either about what I just said or from your practice over the time, or if you're new to the series, anything that you're walking in with about mindfulness meditation? Any challenges or testimonials from practicing? Did people have time to practice last week?
Not much.
Not much. Okay, you did?
Yeah, I actually do have a question.
Yeah, let's hear it, David.
I used to come to Insight and I would do the 30-minute sits and then work, life, everything else. I've gotten back into meditation. I've been doing a lot of guided meditations, but I'm feeling like 20 minutes of somebody talking me through, even if it's like a master like Tara Brach or something, it's not quite the same as the silent sit. So do you have any insights on like the balance of guided to get you into the zone, but backing off and having the silent?
Yeah, so this is a great question. And I'm going to repeat it, but maybe the next question we can use a mic. So the question is about the balance between guided meditations and silent meditation in terms of dropping in, getting in the zone, as you were saying. And that David has been finding that even with a master, it's not quite the same if someone's talking at you for 20 minutes. Is that more, did I get it more or less right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you ride a bicycle?
Yes.
Okay. You might remember, at least I do, way back when you learned to ride a bicycle, you used training wheels. And at a certain point, your parents probably took the training wheels off the bike, right? So it can be like that with guided meditations. If you're able to get to a place where you're settled and in the present moment and in the flow, the guidance can actually inhibit your movement, so to speak, your momentum, just like the training wheels. You know, if you're a professional bike rider, training wheels are going to slow you down, right? So there's an art to finding the balance between. Some people find one guided meditation every now and then is helpful, and then to do a lot more in silence. Other people find they start with a guided, and the beauty of podcasts or whatnot these days is you can just hit the pause button when you feel ready and just do it on your own. So those are two ideas. And generally speaking, to trust your practice, if you feel like you're able to kind of get there on your own, lean into that, because it's also really easy to habituate. So you'll notice I'll offer more instruction tonight than I would on a drop-in sit. But typically, a lot of us, especially if it's hybrid or in person, will only offer about 7 minutes, maybe 10 minutes at the beginning to give people a chance to actually drop in and have their own experience. And that seems to be a sweet spot for a lot of people. So those are just some notions. So trust your instincts. If you feel like it's slowing you down, trust that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions or comments before I move on to tonight's material? Yeah, Susan. Hi.
Hey. I just wanted to share that the noon sits, if that's at all possible, are for me so helpful because I actually need a longer amount of time to settle. So, you know, it's what, like a good 40 minutes of, and usually that most sit leaders won't give much more than like 7 minutes. So then it's really nice. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Great. Thank you for offering the resource. And to name that, not all of the noon sits are being recorded, but the Tuesday ones that I do, we started recording them a couple of weeks ago. At the moment, it's this like sit and little Dharma talk at the end is all one thing, but you can always hit the pause button. I won't be offended if you stop my voice. So, but yes, the balance is kind of designed for people to have more of their own experience, as Susan was saying. And a lot of us, it takes at least 25 to 30 minutes for a lot of people to settle. And sometimes a lot longer, depending on where you're at, what your day is like. So thank you for the questions and comments, everybody. Tonight is mindfulness of emotions. Mindfulness of emotions. And there's a lot to say about this topic. We all have them, right? And for some people, their emotions are their compass through their life. Right? They can make things feel really, really believable. The difference between having a flip of thought and a flip of thought with a lot of emotion is a big, big difference, right? So there are a few basic principles here about emotion. First of all, if you call to mind a recent emotion, and if you can, maybe a positive one's a nice one, but if a negative one's what's coming up, go for it. Can you remember what it felt like in your body? So, for example, I was angry recently. Heat. There was heat. There was like energy, wanting to move, tension. Heart rate went up. Brow furrowed a little bit. And there's a few. Yours might be different. But maybe anybody want to name any feelings associated with any other emotions?
You can tell anger is a big one of me because I have a line right here, the furrowing in the brow, and trying to make it go away, but it won't. But usually that's the first thing I feel.
That's
a kind of a relaxed look for me. I'm working on smoothing it out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm very emotional based.
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations, you're human. Anybody else? And it doesn't have to be anger, it can be joy or sadness or bliss or whatever. Yeah, please. Could you get the mic? I'm sorry, I forgot your name already.
August,
thank you. Yeah, this is for the benefit of our Zoom group.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you, Morgan.
I was thinking of like anxiety. Mm-hmm. And, like, I feel a lot of tightness in my leg. Yeah. Kind of like a churning in my belly. And an increase in heart rate, for sure.
Yeah, good noticing. Yeah, the tightness in legs, churning in belly, heart rate. I know for me, anxiety brings my breath up into my upper chest and out of my diaphragm. I mean, it's not gone from my diaphragm, but my experience is like tension up in ear or shoulders sometimes. Any others you want to describe, anybody, before I go on? Yeah, Susan.
Today somebody helped me with something, and I was so lucky that I remembered to be mindful, because I noticed that I felt gratitude, and I'd been pretty grumpy earlier, so it was really nice to notice, like, oh, there's more expansiveness in my trunk, and mm-hmm. feels like there's just this kind of warm, fresh air inside there. It was really lovely.
Nice, nice. Expansiveness, warmth, space. Yeah, and I received a communication from someone not long before this class that evoked compassion. And I could feel like a softening behind my eyes. And a warmth in my chest, and feeling that was close to sadness, but not quite sadness, of care, tenderness, that opened up my body, but was a little heavier than the gratitude that Susan just described. It was like also very like present, like the wish to help was part of it, that impulse towards, but a very different kind of impulse than the impulse of anger. Anybody else before I go on? You don't have to. I love hearing these descriptions of people's embodied experience of feelings. So, emotions in the body, noticing that is a really great foundation to allowing emotions to flow through us, to move through. I mean, who here has ever had a stuck emotion, like a loop, right? Yeah. Exactly. Who hasn't? Most of the time, if an emotion is stuck in us, we're thinking about it. There's a reaction in the mind that's feeding the emotion, that's feeding the reaction in the mind, that's feeding the emotion, and on and on and on. We have a feedback loop going, right? So we'll talk about mindfulness of thinking next week. But meanwhile, the shortcut is dropping to feeling it. Feeling it in your body is a really wonderful way to start to disengage from this recursive cycle of building, right? I remember this was many years ago, but my sister and I are very close, and I don't remember what the heck we were in conflict about. It doesn't happen very often, but we were in conflict, and it was a phone call. And I remember feeling the flood of emotion just course through my whole body. And for the first time in my adult life, I could just be with that. I didn't have to have a thought about it, and I didn't have to open my mouth about it. And it transformed the conversation, right? So there's power in that tolerance of just like, wow, all right, activation. Holy moly. It's kind of like feeling a rainstorm move through when it's intense, right? What that does is it gives a little bit more distance from all of the layers we add on. And this happens with both so-called positive emotions and negative emotions. I'll talk about negative emotions first. So let's say I am feeling anger or guilt or sadness. It's one thing just to feel it move through. That's what's known as, in the Buddhist teachings, the first arrow, a person being hit by an arrow. Ouch. Doesn't feel good. The second arrow, and for that matter, the third, the 10th, the 20th, is what we add on. Anger at being sad, self-recrimination of being angry. Whatever it is, that added judgment will often be more painful than the emotion itself. I saw this all the time in my work as a hospital chaplain. People are sad often in the hospital, either for themselves or their loved ones. You know, it's usually not a good place in terms of like what brings you there. There's exceptions. Some people were just able to be sad, to cry, to be with it. Other people, and this is so human, and most of us do this most of the time, would add on the second arrow or the 10th arrow. It shouldn't be like this. I shouldn't be like this. I'm blaming myself. I'm judging myself. I'm blaming someone else. I'm judging someone else. And it amps up the intensity and it lengthens the time. So the second arrow is the kind of suffering that mindfulness meditation is really good at helping us avoid. First notice that it's there, and later avoid making things worse. Avoid making things worse.
Yeah.
I'm recognizing that I have the times completely off on my sheet. Oops, okay. I'm not going to add the second arrow of self-recrimination about printing out the wrong version right now, and I'm going to attempt to go with it. So we're about to go into a guided meditation, and the invitation here is to notice when they arise. You don't have to make one arise, but when they arise, when an emotion arises, notice it. And notice if you add a second arrow, a judgment, a blame, something. And when that happens, the invitation is to move to your body instead. So this is, as I've talked about before, this is training. So it's building a muscle of attention, bringing back to the present moment. And if it's not working, please don't add a third arrow of, I stink at this, right? Just notice. Notice that that thought is there. Come back to the body. So, finding a comfortable posture, balance of relaxation and alertness. The invitation is to soften your eyes. Soften your tongue. And allow your diaphragm and belly to be soft. Notice your body. Just the posture you're in. There's generally tension or relaxation. Pulsing, tingling, calm. Weight or lightness. If it feels helpful, it can be beneficial to take one or two slower, deeper breaths, as deep as is comfortable. And letting it go on the exhale, any excess tension. Any expectations? And then on the next deep breath, paying just a little bit more attention to the exhale than the inhale. Allowing the breathing to be natural. Making the determination and resolve to tune in to the breath through the body. Sound if breath and body doesn't work. And to allow that present moment experience. Rising and falling with the abdomen and the chest, the in-breath and the out-breath, the nose. Letting that be at the forefront of your attention. Noticing the sensation of breathing in and breathing in. Breathing out when breathing out. If it's helpful, making a soft mental note, in breath or out breath. Staying in contact. Attending to all the little sensations. The beginning of the inhale. Middle, top of the inhale, the full lungs. And then the exhale. Allowing the mind to settle on the exhale. Until the very, very end of the exhale there. There's a little pause in time, still point, before the next inhale. Notice it, all the details. If an emotion arises, notice the emotion. And perhaps if you recognize it, name it. Oh, joy, contentment, whatever it is. If it's an unpleasant emotion, noticing any second arrows, anything extra, and returning to the embodied sensations of the emotion. If nothing in particular is arising, resting with the breath or the other primary anchor of attention. Just allowing. If you notice thoughts, especially repetitive thoughts, helpful to drop into the emotion driving them. Notice emotion or body sensation that arises with the thought or underneath the thought. You return to embodied experience. in the last remaining moments of this meditation, noticing too any overall attitude or mood in your heart and mind in this moment. And just being aware of it. No need to judge, to fix, to change. Oh yes, this too. Any questions, comments, observations from that? Including if an emotion decided not to come. Sometimes if we invite these experiences, they get shy. But you'll notice. Yes, and you happen to have the mic. That works. Thanks, August.
I noticed some sleepiness.
That is definitely a mind state, so thank you for noticing.
It was great. It was also like feeling more
like just gonna So sleepiness and restlessness, and was there an attitude towards either of those things?
I found my mind, I would come in contact with the restlessness in particular, and I'd be off into the things that happened in my day, things that I'm doing tonight, and there were moments where I could do that, and then contact with it. The sensation is not going really going fine.
Great. So you were fine with it.
Yeah.
I think being totally fine is in the equanimous realm of emotion. Great. Thank you. Anybody else want to share? Susan Kay. Right. So I went from feeling an emotion, sadness, to spacing out, to feeling numb, to watching my breath, and then to all over the place. So good noticing, very good noticing. So one thing that can be true is for some of us, many of us, there's some emotion or two, maybe a family of them, that we're not comfortable contacting. So in my family of origin, sadness was definitely not okay. It was not allowed in my family. I was well into adulthood before I could really recognize sadness in myself and others. I mean, of course, if someone was bawling or something, it was obvious, but you know, the more subtle realms. And when there's that conditioning, and I'm not saying this is true for the person who shared this, but for myself, when there is that conditioning, there's also the conditioning for our mind to just leap away from the emotion. So contact it and out of there, right? So spacing out, restlessness, sometimes sleepiness. And I'm not talking about normal average sleepiness, like you're a little tired, it's been a long day. But if I get super sleepy all of a sudden after I've contacted an emotion and an otherwise normal sit, something else is going on. So to notice that, and as you shared, Susan, to go through the whole process of noticing it and just be with it, because those, whatever is happening in the mind, the okayness with it of mindfulness helps to start to unwind it. It helps to start to unwind it. So David, you have a mic. I'm thinking you might be interested in talking. Is that right?
Yeah, this is just a timely reminder to separate the emotion from the story.
Yeah.
It's those damn third, fourth, 80th arrows that, I mean, that's really, you know, why I feel like I'm here, why I feel like a lot of people come to meditation. And so I want to say thank you. And just trying to, I guess, I don't know if you speak more to sitting with the emotion and separating the story, you know, or separating the tagline or whatever it is. But in terms of just sitting with the emotion, letting it be,
I'm going to be speaking a lot more to that in just a few minutes. Meanwhile, I'm curious if you're willing to share, you don't have to. In sitting with the emotion and letting it be, it sounds like the tagline was keeping coming back. Is that right?
Yes, but way less so than if I'm not meditating and being mindful of it.
Yeah. So I have a question for you, that this is an inquiry I use in my own meditation. If there's, especially if there's a really strong story or one that persists, that doesn't want to go away, assign it a believability index from 1 to 10, or if you like big numbers, 1 to 100, 100 being absolutely certain it's true and 0 being, oh, this is a complete fallacy, it's BS, right? And just notice where in that range you fall in that moment, and that can help to just have a little distance, right? Just a little distance. It could be as simple as noticing, I'm believing this tagline and it feels really true, 90, 95%. Even that is shifting it from truth to, oh, this is a story. It might be a really well-worn story. It might be parts of it are true, and it's still a narrative. So that's one possibility you can play with. For me, it tends to inject ever so slight of an amount of humor in the situation too. So, and I will speak a lot more in a couple moments. Do you have anything, any other questions or comments based on that?
No, thank you.
Okay, great. Anybody else before we continue? Anybody online have anything to say? Yes, Tess. Hi. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you. Can you hear me okay?
Hear you great. Have you been able to hear me okay?
Yes.
Great.
It was funny when you said add the humor, because I've been working with some generational sadness and tension. And it feels like it's pinching my nerves and my shoulder and stuff like that. And tonight I was saying, I am so impatient with this. And then I went, oh, impatient and generational. It was like, I just had to laugh because of course it's going to take some time.
Yeah.
Right. And, but it was good to have, get to the impatience and then like the opposite. It just made me smile a little bit. So I appreciate the humor in there as well.
Beautiful. I'm glad you see the humor in there too. Like, what makes us think we're going to unwind these ancient patterns like that, right?
Right.
So humor and humility both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? questions or challenges based on that so far? And welcome, by the way. Yes.
Don, with the tension and the pinching, it does get uncomfortable at times. Can you speak to that with the body when we are sitting a little bit more?
Yeah, of course. So, so we talked some about pain last week, and this is kind of another layer of working with the pain or discomfort or tension. Tension is a milder experience often, not always. One really helpful thing is what you're already doing, Tess, is start to notice the relationship. When the mind goes there, tension happens. When the mind drops, that tension goes away, right? So that's one that you can do. It's not cheating, as someone's doing right now, to stretch, to shift, especially if you know it's a pinched nerve. Please take care of your body. Please, right? We're not in a zendo where you can't, you know, the instruction is to never move. So use your own wisdom, use your own discernment about what feels right. And maybe notice the first impulse to move, the second impulse to move, and then do something. This is fine. I know that's really basic, but then notice what it feels like to take care of yourself. And that's, so for some of us, that is a lifelong learning to get to the place where we can take care of ourselves. So those are two. And then the last one is, for me, as I've shared with many of you, I came into this practice through the doorway of chronic pain. And there's a couple of things that help with tension and pain that I'm not sure I covered last week. One is to really attend to the emotion about the pain itself. So that, in a sense, because pain, like pain psychologists tell us, pain is a very layered phenomenon. And like I was talking about last week, our attitude about the pain can make the pain worse or better. We might not have in meditation access to relaxing tension, for example, but we often will have access to relaxing our attitude about the tension. Oh, you can be here. Or finding a physical area in the body around the tension is another one. Oh, it's not complete, right? It's not. My whole body isn't locked up. It's just my, you know, shoulder, thoracic spine, neck, whatever. But often it's helpful to take a step back. Tension or pain, what's the attitude towards it? If the attitude is, I hate this, what's the attitude about that? Take another step back. And then finally, to breathe through it, breathe through it. Actually imagine breathing through it as if the breath were moving in and out of the muscle fibers or the nerves. And I find it really helpful to do that with the intention of love or kindness or compassion. You don't have to manufacture the emotion, but just that, oh, yeah, oh, it's okay. Thank you for the question. Anybody else? You don't have to speak. It's just an invitation. Okay. Going once, going twice. Oh, the next segment here. I'm going to talk about a technique for teasing apart the story from the emotion. And this technique has the acronym RAFT, R-A-F-T, which those of you who are students of Buddhism may recognize that there's a simile the Buddha uses as a raft floating us across the ocean of suffering to freedom. So this raft can float us across the ocean of suffering of emotions in the moment and possibly much further. And like I said, it's an acronym. Recognizing, allowing, feeling, and teasing apart are the four parts of it. So the first step in working with emotion is to recognize that it's happening. And for some of us, that's a profound step, right? So recognizing boredom, anxiety, happiness, sadness, whatever it is, just acknowledging and recognizing it. A mental label can be helpful at that time. And sometimes, for many of us, it's helpful to go to the body to even figure out what it is, right? It's not always obvious. Like, I'm giving us the primary colors of emotion. There are all these subtle gradations in between. Have you noticed? You know, ennui, nostalgia, frustration, mild nervousness with excitement. Like, there's all these like subtle primary, secondary, and tertiary colors in the palette. So don't get overthinking about it, but moving to the body, moving to the sensations, and allowing it. The second step is to allow the emotion just to be. This doesn't mean condoning it. It doesn't mean believing the story that comes with it, justifying it either. It doesn't even mean judging it or blaming yourself for having it. Some people blame themselves for rage, especially people who've had difficult experiences happen to them, right? Other people might blame themselves for getting sad. So the invitation is allowing the emotion to be there. For the purposes of mindfulness meditation, any emotion is as good or fine as any other. There's no wrong emotion. Emotions just are. They're part of being human. And resisting them doesn't usually work, have you noticed? For me, resisting anger, that just locked me up in my body. It was really uncomfortable. Resisting sadness, very similar. Your particular body, mind, system might respond differently, but you probably got your own version, whatever it is. As many teachers say, what we resist persists. So if I'm mad about being mad, guess what? More mad. If I am devastated about being sad, guess what? More of it. So allowing as best you can it to simply be there without judgment, without blame, without commentary, and without buying into it, making it a certain kind of person, right? We all come with the full range. It's not a mistake. Sometimes it's the first arrow, depending on the emotion. And even beautiful experiences, joy. Joy is a lovely emotion. If I don't believe I deserve joy, what happened? Tamped down. Or if, oh, I had to have this, I want more of it. Well, then you kind of like edge it out with stress. So just allowing it to do its thing. It's like weather. It's going to do its thing anyway. May as well not try to stop it. So, as I've talked about already, feeling is actually taking our time to be aware of the experiences of the emotions in the body, and I'll add the mind, the heart. Giving yourself the gift of metabolizing, feeling into what's happening. It's very respectful of our inner life to actually let ourselves feel what we're feeling. Even if it's not okay to act on. And, you know, we live in a civilized society. There are plenty of emotions that are not cool to act on in a given moment. We can still let them be and feel into them. In a sense, our body becomes that bigger container for the emotion. I talked last week about the body being a bigger container for thoughts. The analogy of if your mind is a TV screen that most of us experience, it kind of up here, to stretch out to the rest of the house. And it's not so compelling anymore. Oh, okay. The other thing that going to the feelings in the body can do is it helps us not spin out as much into there and then. And a lot of emotion, I dare say most of emotion, is about what's happening then and there, not here and now. I mean, the emotions are sure happening here and now, but whatever the event was, I'm guessing you're not having a hugely strong reaction to being sitting in a Zoom room or sitting in a meditation hall listening to me go on and on, right? It in itself is probably not all that sparking a whole lot unless it's touching something else, historical, or some projection into the future. So present moment experience, feeling. And then the last part is the teasing apart. And as I mentioned with pain, that it's a layered experience. There's physical sensation, attitude, and thought. Emotions are like that too. So emotions are these what are called composite events. There's physical parts to them, as we've been talking about. And there's emotional, like mental parts of them. If you want to break them apart, there was actually no category for emotion in the Buddha's time, which blows a lot of people's minds. Like, well, did they not have emotions? Of course they had emotions. They didn't categorize them the way we do. There's a mind state or a mental attitude. There's a thought and there's a physical sensation. And when you put the three of those together, voila, you have what we call an emotion. It can be super helpful to tease those three things apart. I'll say it again, mind state or attitude, physical sensation, and some kind of thought. And I'm using thought here in a very expansive way. It can be a judgment. It can be a view or a standard about the way things are. I should be like this. They should be like that. This kind of person does this. This kind of situation means that. That's also in the realm of mental activity. Oftentimes for me, if I'm feeling an emotion, there's some kind of view lurking underneath. Some kind of should or shouldn't is in there. So seeing these different elements can also start to take away from this kind of diffuse authority that emotions have. Have you noticed? A thought with a lot of emotion around it feels really true. Right. Yeah, righteousness or collapse or yes, this is it. To start to tease apart these layers begins the process of distinguishing emotions from my reactions to them. And emotions and our reactions from what's actually happening. in this moment. This is a particularly humbling example, but I'll use it because I still fall prey to this. I'm a very experienced practitioner, folks. Emails. Well, first of all, most of us get too many of them. There are times where I've just learned the first time I read an email, if it is a charge for me, to take a step back. And it's really interesting to go back in a different frame of mind later and reread the same text, and it may have a completely different meaning. Because, of course, we can't hear the tone of voice of the person. We only read the words. So whatever lurking background emotion is already in us about them or our day or ourselves, it gets projected right on. So with a lot of humility, I will actually say I have misread words even, because the expectation is so strong from an emotional state. And I know I'm not alone. Email is a simple example. People do this in conversations too, right? So the teasing apart, the disidentification gives more capacity to see, wow, what's actually happening right now? And if the emotion can just be an emotion, it's actually a whole lot simpler to deal with than our add-on second arrows, 30th arrows, 50th arrows, judgments, attitudes about it. Like I was saying earlier, that amps it up. It can also kind of tangle us up and trap us in it in a way that just being with the, oh, sadness doesn't. Gives it permission to move. And that can be really, really helpful. So again, to recap, the steps of RAFT are recognizing the emotion, labeling it as best you can. And you don't have to be like a skilled psychotherapist and have every nuance right. You know, just get into the ballpark. And then allow it. Allow it to be there. Then feel it in your body, your heart, your mind. Feel the impact. And then finally, that teasing apart, the teasing apart of the layers, mind state, thought, body sensations. So that was a lot of talking. Does anybody have a question that I wasn't able to? What's RAFT? I think I just repeated it, so I think it's probably clear now. Anybody have questions about it before we do a guided meditation on it? Recognize, allow, feel, tease apart. And with that, the invitation is to settle back into a meditation posture. Taking two or three deeper, slower breaths. And inviting relaxation in the out-breath. And then allowing the breathing to be one. Feeling into the sensations of your whole body. And maybe noticing areas of tension or relaxation. And inviting, may this body relax, soften. May my mind and heart relax and be present. And having breathing or your other anchor be at the forefront of awareness, the center of your attention for a few minutes. Especially noticing how it feels in the core of your body, your heart, your diaphragm, your belly. As you breathe, as you're present. And now the invitation, if it hasn't arisen already, is to call to mind some emotion that you've experienced recently, noticing the situation and memory, not the most intense emotion, maybe, just something that's affected you. Naming internally, recognizing what is that emotion. Allowing it to be present. Feeling it in your body, maybe in your face, your heart center, your shoulders, your belly, your legs, just allow it. The invitation is to notice, ease apart the different pieces, noticing the sensations shifting, changing. Noticing any thoughts as thought, as stories. Story, thinking, and noticing any attitude, belief about the experience. And believing. Compassion. Or judgment or whatever. And when you're ready, letting that go. And returning to your primary anchor of attention. Breathing, sound. until another emotion arises, and playing with this process. Recognize. Allow. Feel. Ease apart. The predominant experience of emotion or thinking no longer becomes compelling. Returning again to the body, resting. And the invitation is any observations, questions, complaints, comments, testimonials. I'll say part of why I'm asking. Did you just raise your hand? Okay. What's your name? I'm Dawn.
Nice to meet you.
Someone will come bring a mic if you're okay with it so the Zoom people can hear. Thank you, Mila. Thank
you. The moment I started going quiet, immediately the pain that I've been struggling with came to the surface. And when my mind is busy throughout the day, I'm not as paying attention. But the moment I started going quiet, I said, wow, how wonderful to be in this sweet space. Pain says, wait a second, I'm right here.
Yeah.
And that, it kind of got me out of the space right away. And I realized where was this desire to move. And so there was a lot of restlessness. I was dealing, was moving my body, was dealing with that pain.
Yeah, I'm
not sure if you have any recommendations how to deal with this. You talked a little bit before.
Yeah.
And it's a chronic pain. It just hasn't been gone away, and it just becomes loud when I try to relax.
Of course. Yeah. So thank you for the question. It's a good question. The first thing I'm going to say is you might consider listening to last week's recording, because I did a good solid segment on pain. And I'll still speak to it now, but it just might be helpful to listen to that. I think we even did a little bit of guided meditation with it. What you're describing is so common, not just to you, but to any of us, whether it's physical pain or mental, emotional pain. We get quiet, and that part is just like, wait, this is my chance. I get to get heard, which isn't pleasant necessarily. It can be helpful. So you said the moment I try to relax, it comes, right? And I feel that. I as I shared, I came into this practice through chronic pain, right? So what can happen is embedded in that I try to relax and then the pain comes is this battle with the pain a little bit. I don't know if that resonates for you, but there's this pushing against it. So one of the most powerful things any of us can do, and it's not an easy ask, is with either physical or mental pain to allow it without pushing against it, without being averse to it, without being angry at it or hating it or disliking it. And I'm aware what I'm saying may not be under your control at any given moment. So then the process is to take a step back and turn towards the emotion and see if you can allow the emotion. So the minute I try to relax, it happens. To me, that sounds like understandable frustration, right? So then the task is to be kind to the frustration. Oh, yeah. Because it too needs to be heard. And once it's able to relax, then you may find that the physical or emotional pain that it's in relationship to can also relax. So that's the one thing you can do. Another thing, and this works with both emotional and physical pain, is to go to a different object entirely. Sound is a really helpful one. To intentionally, if you can, because chronic pain is usually a misunderstanding in our neurology, right? It's gotten stuck in a loop. It's like, because pain is a message telling us to change something to keep ourselves healthy. With chronic pain, usually there's some kind of feedback loop happening. So anything you can do to interrupt it. And this can be true of emotional pain too, if we're stuck in a feedback loop. Like a third of American adults experience generalized anxiety. That's a loop too. So moving outwards to another object of attention, anchor of attention, sound, image, opening your eyes even, or even like the intention of care, of kindness, but finding an alternate. The last thing I'll say is you can find a safe space in your body, possibly. So when I started, all I had was an earlobe or a fingernail. Is there more?
Is that okay when I feel restless to move? Is it okay maybe to do walking meditation if I'm very restless dealing with physical discomfort?
Absolutely. It's a little awkward to do it in a meditation hall like this, but like what you were doing, like moving around and stretching, is just take care of yourself first. It's a little different in a formal setting when you're on a retreat or a long sit. Then you want to try to, like, you can go to another part of the hall or another part of the center and walk or move. But for the purposes of what you're doing, notice, the thing is to be aware and notice the effect of moving. Notice the effect of what you're doing. And notice the impulse, which you did. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments about working with emotion? Danny.
Well, I just wanted to say that one of the things that I've been reading about with Buddha and taking it to heart is there is no wrong way. There is no right way. There's a guided way. There's, you know, a general way. But if it benefits you, me, to, like this time, for some reason, I felt like opening my eyes
mm-hmm.
and just focusing on the pain on the wall, which I have never really done before.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different, and it was working for me. For some reason, this time, it was like I was able to get something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just being different. There's no right or wrong way. It's finding what works for you and moment by moment.
Yes. So experimenting. Experimenting moment by moment is incredibly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And meditation can be a creative process, right? It can be a creative process. So it's okay to play. It's okay to experiment. It's okay to fail, whatever that is, and start over. That's all great, because you're learning your own way. You're learning your own way. So we are out of time. Thank you all for your attention. Are there announcements from any Sangha members?
So for those of you who are new, there's something called Dana or donation. ISC in Santa Cruz has been going for about 35 years, never charged a dime, solely exist off donations. We have two baskets in the back. For those of you online, you can go online and donate that way. We have a basket for the community, which helps to keep the lights on, and we have one for the instructors because they give a tremendous amount of their time, tremendous amount of their energy, and it's beneficial for them and for the Sangha. I think that's it.
Okay, thank you, Manny. Any other announcements from Sangha members? Okay. So to say that generosity is welcome here. We're a generosity-based center. And if monetary generosity isn't possible or doesn't feel right, that if you want to volunteer, you can. It's warmly welcome. And if that isn't within your means in your current life, please use your practice as an opportunity for generosity for yourself and the people around you. That's the greatest gift that you can give. So, thank you all. Thank you for your practice. And hope to see some of you next week. Be well. Bye, Susan. Bye, Tess. Bye, David.
Thank you.
Bye,
not.
Thank you. Good night.